John, how long can we hold out?
Well, I'm going to the bank this afternoon, Anna, and see if we can get any more credit. If we don't get it, we're just about washed up.
The National Broadcasting Company presents The National Hour. This is a mirror of public opinion, reflecting what America and the world are thinking, planning, doing. This is today's interpretation of the problems and the newsworthy milestones that we must reach and pass on the road to peace and reconstruction. Today, March 17th, 1946, we present the 18th in the distinguished new NBC series, The National Hour. Our subject for today:
the future of small business in America.
Recently in Washington, Secretary of Commerce Henry A. Wallace testified before the House Small Business Committee.
There never has been a more critical year in the peacetime history of the United States than the one that lies ahead. This is the year for decisive action. What we do this year will determine the entire course of our post-war economy.
We can take the necessary action to establish the conditions for economic growth, full employment, and prosperity.
Or we can muddle through with a phony prosperity, leading to a deflation whose cumulative power and destructive consequences can wreck our entire economy.
And among the most important of the decisions to be made for sound prosperity are those affecting
the future of small business in America.
This is Robert McCormick speaking from Washington, where many decisions are destined to be made affecting the small business man. A little later in the program, we will hear from the Undersecretary of Commerce, Alfred Schindler, who will report on what the government is doing about the urgent problems of little business. We are standing by.
And this is Robert St. John in New York. Any documentation of the future of small business must give weighty consideration to a group of men, a large group of men, who until recently were engaged in quite a different field of endeavor, the business of war. Today we shall describe what effect the war has had upon shops and stores and businesses here at home. We shall also consider some of the obstacles that lie ahead of those who are going from the business of war into a business in peace. Not so long ago, in a foxhole in Europe.
Hey, Joe.
Hmm?
Come on, keep your eyes open, will you? You're asleep.
No, I wasn't sleeping. Just dreaming.
Oh, can't you keep your mind off that thing for 10 seconds at a time?
Stop it, will you? I was just thinking about getting home someday.
Oh, just gotta be different, huh? You and a couple of million other guys.
Yeah, but I'm thinking constructive.
Yeah? Like what?
Well, I've been thinking about... You know what I'm going to do when I get back, Sam?
Sure. Find some civilian way to Goldbrick.
That's what you think. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have my own little store. Work for myself, see? Be my own boss. No top kick's going to push me around when I go to work again.
Hey, maybe you got something there. And, well, as long as there's no charge for dreaming, I think I'll open a filling station. You know, I bet I could make a go of it.
Sure. Why not? I worked in a grocery store a couple of years before they sent me the greetings. Figure I know enough to run a small place by myself now.
Yeah, me too. Hey, I tell you what, Joe. I'll buy all my groceries at your place.
Cash. No credit. And that reminds me, what about the $5 you owe me?
Joe, when we get back home, I'm going to let you take it all out in gas.
Today, thousands of men and women, a large number of them returning veterans, are eager to get into business for themselves. A few of them, very few of them, have any trained knowledge of how to run a business. Few of them are aware of the difficulties they will face, but it's vitally important to the nation that the majority of these people succeed in their ventures. And why? Well, first, let's define little business and determine its place in our economy.
Well, Washington sees little business as including the small manufacturing plants and wholesale establishments, the small retail firms, hotels, places of amusement, and construction firms. Little business is important because
it owns and operates over 90% of America's factories.
More than 78% of the wholesale firms.
Over 90% of the retail stores.
And little business employs nearly half the workers in the United States.
And why is little business a critical problem in the road to peacetime prosperity? Well, down here in Washington, recently before a House committee, a Department of Commerce spokesman testified on the facts and problems facing the small business enterprises of this country.
Gentlemen, in 1939, there were nearly 3 million small businesses in the United States. By 1944, 500,000 of these firms had closed their doors because of war shortages and dislocations. Unless this loss is made up by new small business ventures, we will be faced with an unemployment problem of grave and increasing proportions.
Small business is vital to our economy, but it is more than that. It's a way of life. The American way of life has always been predicated on freely competitive enterprises operating in a free economy. Little business is America's best safeguard against monopoly. It is the answer to man's dream of economic independence.
Our capital knows that big business, with its mighty factories, has its indispensable place in the American economy. Without it, we could not have won the war. But what is the effect upon the economic life of a city dominated by one or more large corporations? What is the effect upon the thousands of workers who must live near their work, who must every day crowd into one small section of the city where the great sprawling factory lies?
Recently, the Smaller War Plants Corporation made a special report on the difference in living conditions in towns where small businesses predominate and towns of the same size in which large corporations dominate the city's economic life. Facts talk, they say, and so listen.
In the small business towns, nearly twice as many people paid income taxes.
Up to 9 times as many people had incomes over $10,000.
In the towns dominated by big corporations, slums were from 3 to 4 times as frequent as in the small business town.
The infant death rate was nearly double in the big business towns.
There were 2 to 3 times as many facilities for public recreation in the small business towns and up to 7 times as many libraries.
From 7 to 25% more houses had telephones in the small business towns.
From 10 to 25% more homes had electricity.
I think we're all pretty well agreed that little business is stimulating to our economy and beneficial to our way of life. So now, let's consider some of the problems facing small business today. Specifically, what problems is G.I. Joe going to face when he wants to start that small store or shoe repair shop or filling station? Well, the first thing he's going to need is money. And so he goes to his banker to see about raising a loan under the G.I. Bill of Rights.
Hey. Good morning, Mr. Walker.
Oh, good morning, Sammy.
Say, I found just the place I was looking for, and the owner's willing to sell cheap. So?
Well, if you'll just get out the papers and give me my GI money, I can close the deal. Well, that's fine, Sammy. Let me see. It was a filling station you wanted to buy, wasn't it?
That's right. And what a swell setup I found. Oh, a beautiful spot like that.
Now, just a moment, Sammy. I got to know a mite more about this proposition before we get to the paper signing business.
Well, what do you have to know? All I want is my money.
It ain't your money, Sammy. It's a loan, same as any other. Got to ask the same sort of questions on a GI loan as I would on any other.
Oh, okay, then. What do you want to know? Well,
Gosh, I told you I know all about it.
You know all about it, eh? Well, that's fine, Sammy. Save us a heap of time. Now, for example, how many cars go past your location every day?
Oh, about, well, I don't know exactly.
Ought to know your probable sales, Sammy. How many other stations are operating in that area?
Well, two or three, I guess. I don't know for sure.
Ought to know about your competition, boy. What about the equipment? Are the pumps old or new?
Well, they're old, but...
And where are you going to get new ones? And how much are they going to cost you?
Oh, well, I'll worry about that when I can afford to put in new ones.
Afraid you'll have to worry about it now, Sammy. New city ordinance says you got to have the new meter-type pumps.
You do? Gosh, the fella didn't tell me that.
Yeah, appears like there's quite a lot he didn't tell you. What about his profits before gas rationing? Did you look into that?
Oh, yeah, they're okay. I seen the books.
Know if the books were certified?
Certified?
Better find out. The fella may have doctored them up a mite.
Could he do that?
It's always possible.
Gosh.
Appears like there's quite a lot you don't know, Sammy.
Yes, sir.
Tell you what. I better give you a list of the things to find out. And when you've got the answers, come on back. And if the buy don't look too bad, we'll see about a loan for you.
Too much enthusiasm, too little experience. Those are twin pitfalls, fatal pitfalls, into which many a prospective small retailer has tumbled to disaster. And there are many other important problems that the little businessman should study before he attempts to set up shop. Location.
One man was such a poor judge of where to locate a store, he moved three times in the first year. Each move meant remodeling of the new location and loss of customers. Result, a ruinous net operating deficit for the year.
Rent.
One merchant in our town went bankrupt the first year because he wanted space in a new building, paid too much rent for it. Another rented space in an old building to save money, moved in heavy shoe repair machinery, and the floor gave way. And he lost his machinery. You've got to use your judgment.
Prices.
I knew a guy who cut prices so far he forced himself into bankruptcy. His books weren't giving him a true picture of his expenses and profits.
Stock.
Lots of people put too much of their capital into stock. Don't even leave enough over for operating expenses. Result, forced sales and failure.
The facts on the number of failures among new retail establishments are startling and thought-provoking for anyone planning to open his own store.
Washington figures show that one out of three new ventures fails in the first year, two out of three fail within 6 years, and four out of five fail within 10 years. Among the general reasons for this extraordinary record of failure are the inexperience, the poor judgment, and the bad management of many small retailers.
And there are economic factors, too. Sources of credit that would tide the small retailer over a bad period are frequently inadequate and too expensive. His working capital is generally inadequate, and he is therefore at the mercy of even slight fluctuations in business conditions.
These are the hazards which have always confronted the small store owner. But today they face many new problems, problems born of wartime dislocations. And typical of the current situation is this case in a small electric shop in a prosperous suburb of a big East Coast city.
Good morning, John.
Oh, hello, Frank. How are the kids?
Oh, fine. Fine, just fine.
Say, I just this morning put in a call about your washing machine.
Oh? But what'd they say?
Well, not yet. Don't know what's the matter with those people. Got that order in for 2 months now.
Well, that's a pretty long time, John.
Yes. Well, I've done everything under the sun to get delivery for you. Reordered from the manufacturers, written them letters, wired them, and all I get is promises. Frankly, if I don't get some stock to sell soon, I don't know what I'll do.
It's tough, all right. Say, by the way, did you see the morning paper?
Yes.
I see the department store downtown is advertising new washing machines.
Yes, I saw that. I hoped it might mean my order might be coming through, but...
Yeah. Well, John, I sure hate to...
That's okay, Frank.
Well, it's my wife, you see. After all, the machine is for her, and she has waited 2 months.
You want to cancel your order, huh?
Well, you know I hate to do it, John, but the department store has the machines in stock.
Is that refrigerator for sale, John?
No, that's just a demonstration model, Mary. I could take your order, though.
Oh, never mind. I'll try... I'll stop in again.
Is that one for sale?
No, I'm sorry. Those are demonstration models. I have these lamps and heaters for sale, and that's about all.
No thanks, bud. Can't make ice with an electric heater.
John, what are we going to do?
I don't know, Anna. I don't know.
Everything we've got, everything we've saved is in this store.
I know. Maybe it's my fault. Maybe I should have waited until we had the stock in hand before we tried to open up.
But the salesman promised us. How could we know they wouldn't deliver? John, how long can we hold out?
Well, I'm going to the bank this afternoon and see if we can get any more credit. If we don't get it, we're just about washed up.
Strikes, restrictions, reconversions, and scarce commodities are post-war dislocations, taking their toll of many small businesses today. Chicken farmers can't get feed for their chicks. Truckers can't get tires for their vehicles. Garages, relying on repair work to keep going, can't get necessary spare parts because of auto strikes. Small bakers can't get sufficient butter and sugar. Small restaurants can't get enough food. In this situation, small business is looking for increasing help to Congress as the chorus of protest rises.
I can't reconvert unless I get a loan, and I can't pay back a loan unless they scale down taxes.
Rising labor costs will drive me on the rocks.
I can't get materials.
I can't get labor.
Congress has got to do something.
Somebody's got to do something.
And down here, Congress has heard that growing clamor for help, and Congress is trying. Since 1940, both House and Senate have maintained committees to advise them on the problems of small business. But these committees aren't necessarily happy about the way things are going. The House Committee on Small Business says, for example,
"We need a vigorous program to help small business and the executive branch of the government. Big businesses have easy access to the federal government. The little fellows have no access.
The failure of OPA to restore a priority system in the distribution of steel so the small shops can get their share will force many a small shop out of business.
The new wage price policy means that OPA will be swamped with applications from small firms for price increases. OPA can't handle them all, so it will deal with the big firms first, leaving the little fellows holding the bag.
Small business is not getting a fair break in the disposal of surplus property."
So it goes. Congress is trying to figure out solutions to these problems, and there are several agencies of the executive branch of the government which are interested in the problems of small business today. Perhaps the most active of them is the Department of Commerce, which is planning an expansion of its activities in the aid of little business throughout the entire economic field. For the small retailer, it now can give specific advice on general administration, buying and selling, delivery, storage, record keeping, personnel, advertising, and all those things. And in addition, it is issuing pamphlets on how to establish and operate small firms, from shoe repair shops to sawmills.
What the Department of Commerce is now offering is virtually a correspondence course in starting and operating a small business. But there are many civic organizations which supplement this work by actually sitting down with a man who wants to start his own business and discussing his problems with him. One of the most interesting programs that is being developed is the Retailer Veteran Community Program, sponsored by the American Retail Federation. This is how it works. Listen.
Well, good morning, ma'am. My name is Eddie Ames. A fellow over at the Chamber of Commerce sent me over here. I want to open up a store, and he said I could get some help here.
Why, of course. You'll want to see Mr. Fisher. He's in charge of our veteran program. You're a veteran, I see.
Yes, ma'am. Just out.
Well, step right this way. Here's a Mr. Eddie Ames to see you, Mr. Fisher. He wants to open his own store.
Sure. Come right in, Eddie, and we'll talk it over.
Oh, thanks.
Have a seat.
Thank you.
Now, what kind of business do you want to open, Eddie?
Hardware.
Mm-hmm. Any experience on that line?
Well, I worked in a hardware store a couple of years before I joined up.
I see. That's fine. Well, let's see. You want to see a banker about arranging a GI loan? Mr. Nelson of the First National is about the soundest man I know for that. Then we'll want to talk to a hardware man. I suggest Bill Fry. He's been darn successful. After that, we'll want to talk to a real estate man about rents and locations and so on. Now, will tomorrow do, or do you want to get started right now?
Well, if it's all the same, I'd just as soon get going now. You sound like you got me licked before I start, Mr. Nelson.
Well, not quite as bad as that, young man. I merely want you to appreciate the way the bank has to look at your prospects. But you come to see me when you need credit, and if your business appears sound, I imagine we'll find some way to help you.
Well, Mr. Fry, the next question I wanted to ask you was about stocking my store. I guess you've been in the business long enough to know where I can get the best stuff cheapest.
Well, I'm afraid that question is more complicated than you think, Eddie. The real question is, can you get any stock at all? Most salesmen are having a hard time supplying their old customers, and they don't want to take on any new ones.
Well, gosh, what do I do?
Well, I guess I'll have to try and help you out on that one, Eddie. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll tack your orders onto mine and see if we can't get your stock for you that way.
Gee, that's swell of you, Mr. Fry.
And I'll go further than that. Anything you can't sell in a reasonable length of time, I'll buy back from you. Oh, I can afford to carry a lot more dead stock than you can, and I won't let you buy anything we can't move eventually.
But gosh, Mr. Fry, I'll be in competition with you. I can't understand how you can afford to be so darn nice to me, even if you want to.
Son, the more businesses there are in a community, the more jobs there are, the more money is in circulation, and the better off we all are. I not only want to help you, I want to see you succeed. For your sake, for my sake, and for the sake of the community.
Gee, that's a darn swell way to look at it. Why, gosh, there's nothing to it. I get a loan, buy some stock, rent a store, work like the mischief for 15 years, and bingo, I'm in.
Well, that's the way it works. The leaders in many communities sit down with a veteran and give him their advice and help. If they decide that he does not have a reasonable chance of succeeding in his business, they recommend that he take a government-sponsored worker training job in the kind of firm he wants to run, so that he can learn the problems and get the necessary experience at first hand.
That's just one of the many programs designed to help the returning veteran. But what of the future? Will small business get enough help in time? Here in the studio is Mr. Alfred Schindler, Undersecretary of Commerce, to give us the answer of the Department of Commerce on the future of small business. Mr. Schindler.
As I listen today to this dramatization of small business, I tried to visualize where America would be without small business. Try and picture a typical American city or town without its grocery stores and many shops, without its laundries and small factories. To me, these small businesses typify those things for which our nation stands. For small business means opportunity and competition without which there can be no free enterprise. Yet we stand idly by and see nearly one-third of our new business ventures close in their first year. This is economic tragedy. Last year, about 125,000 new businesses were started. We need them, and many, many more. What can we do to assist these new businesses and the 3 million old ones so that they may live and grow? Proper information before and after they start operations will enable many to avoid pitfalls or failures. The Department of Commerce, through its Office of Small Business, plans to make such information available. The small businessman will be able to find out about the business outlook and potential markets in his particular industry and area. Available to him will be detailed and accurate data on such matters as distribution, selling, sources of supply, accounting, potential profits, and other subjects. Trained men will discuss with him his individual plans and problems. Also, we have in this nation a huge reservoir of non-confidential technical information. During recent war years, great strides have been made in developing new materials, production processes, and in other technological fields. The Department of Commerce will serve as a clearinghouse where the small businessman can get the answer to his technical problems. Small businesses must have adequate financing. They must be able to borrow money for longer terms and at lower rates of interest. The Department of Commerce does not lend money. But if existing methods do not bring a freer flow of capital to the small businessman, then the department will fight to see that means of financial assistance are provided. The small businessman needs, above all, a friend in court who will represent his interests. The small office business is that friend. We will represent him in his problems with other government agencies, help him get, among other things, materials, machinery, and price adjustments. We will also seek to eliminate inequities in our laws, regulations, and economic structure which discriminate against him. Do these things, and native ability and ingenuity will enable most small businessmen to succeed. All America will benefit through a sounder, better balanced economy.
Thank you, Mr. Schindler.
The problems and the future of little business have been the subject of our documentary. And this is what we have learned.
That little business is the backbone of our American way of life and employs nearly one half of the workers in the United States. That today thousands and thousands of young men and women, war workers with savings and returning veterans, are eager to go into business for themselves and find out themselves faced with problems unprecedented in our history. And that Congress, and the Department of Commerce, and numerous civic organizations are determined that in this year of decision, little business shall be given the opportunity to prosper and grow and take its place as the mainspring of our prosperity and our hope of the future.
On the subject of the future of small business, then, our documentary is closed.
But this is Robert St. John inviting you to listen to the National Hour again next Sunday at this same time, when our subject will be President Truman's Health Bill, a preview of its course through Congress.
This has been the National Hour. From our studios in New York and Washington, the National Broadcasting Company has presented the 18th of the new series on current affairs and national problems. Our speaker today was Mr. Alfred Schindler, Undersecretary of Commerce. Robert St. John was your narrator, with Robert McCormick reporting from Washington. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.